Notre Dame, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, hi there. Who we got now?
Hello. You got Edmund Wu.
Must be Edmund.
Oh, hello, Edmund.
Hey, Coach.
How are you?
I'm doing good. Hey, Bill.
Hi, buddy.
Who else am I on the line with?
You got it. Right now, it's the nasty.
it's the nasty trio
again. Here we go again. Except this time, I'm actually at home.
Okay, there you go.
Instead of sitting in
Sunday. Hey, Coach, thank you for all the things that you sent me.
Oh, I'm glad you're... I hope you get some benefit out of it.
Yes, sir, I have. I have read and reread and reread already.
Okay, well, very good. What have you done since last we talked?
Since the last time we've talked, a lot of thinking.
Okay, good.
A lot of thinking. And basically, you know, I've sat down basically with my head guy. The guy that we were talking
to.
Yep.
Right. The fellow that was going to organize everything there for
right, us. Right. And just say, you know, because the numbers are very, I mean, we're way down, you know. We're down, the first year that he ran the place, we're down 50. And then we're down another 150 the past year.
Yeah.
So 200 grand down from 1.1 or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah,
some serious money. So you're at 900 or below 900,000.
Yeah, that's all profit there.
Yeah, that's all profit. You know, and so anyway, but basically what I've told him is that for the time being, that 5 nights out of the week, that I would be in there 3-4 hours a night.
Okay.
You know, just in between he and I, that we would, you know, we would get, you know, that we would provide the sample and get these programs back up to where they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get the sew the magic back into the operation.
Right.
Meanwhile, I want to try to shift some of the other things that I do on a day-to-day basis that are control type things or ordering type of things that I do for some of the other operations.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to shift to him.
Right, and so you can spend more time with the customer.
So more time with the customers, more time on the marketing aspects,
yes.
That kind of thing.
Good. Well, you know, we didn't. I don't remember a lot about the format, what's going on in your restaurant. What would you say would be the compelling reason they would come to your restaurant and pass up others?
Right. The things that we sell. I mean, the things that we push has our unique selling positions.
Mm-hmm.
And that one of the things I want to discuss is maybe, you know, I'm wondering if we're pushing it too much. But the first thing is the menu. The product that we offer is state fish and wild game.
Mm-hmm.
And wild game accounts for 40-50% of our sales. And in our marketing message, that the main thing that we hit over and over and over is the wild game.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, being a Bill Marvin acolyte, you know, you really look for these things that set you apart.
Sure.
And we've done that, which I'm wondering sometimes if we've done it too much, if I've gone overboard emphasizing that.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is...
Emphasizing what? The wild game?
Emphasizing the wild game, the uniqueness of the food.
What makes you say that?
I get feedback sometimes from people, especially people I run into on the street. If I'm wearing my Saskatoon shirt or if I'm out doing my, you know, we do a number of charity events, where, you know, community events where we're providing the food kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And people would say, oh, you know, yeah, I try to go out there, but my wife thinks, you know, she won't find anything she likes. You guys only, you know, serve. I said, well, actually 50-60% of our sales is from, you know, your good old fillets or salmon and that type of thing, man.
Sure,
you know.
Sure.
Yeah, but I think a lot of times the message is getting out there is that, you know, we emphasize the elk and the buffalo and the ostrich so much that people know us because of the menu that we serve, but not that we serve, you know, regular food also.
Well, you know, and I'm looking for Bill to join in here, not being high personally on wild game, that's, I'm not.
Right.
It might, and I, again, you know, you've got to go sit in the restaurant and watch with people and talk to them, and that's the kind of feedback you're going to get. You
mm-hmm.
go back in now. But, you know what, 40% of your menu coming out of wild game is a serious amount.
Right.
But unfortunately, if there's not enough customers that like wild game, that could miss that kind of percentage or could misdirect you.
Right. And that's why I like you. I mean, obviously, you guys don't have a menu in front of you.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what one of the things I said. Well, you know, maybe we should broaden our menu a little bit.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Phil?
Well, there's a couple of possibilities. One, from a marketing point of view, you may want to at some point just do a salmon promotion or a steak promotion or something to sort of let people know that that's out there. But you might want to shift the focus. More to the idea of the lodge feel.
Right. Yeah, that's the second thing that I was going to tell Coach was the one reason why people may want to come is the lodge feel.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that the lodge thing sort of speaks of the wild game, but it doesn't necessarily obligate you to that.
It doesn't force you to stay into that area. And again, I'm thinking of the restaurants that I've seen that do this type of thing. They tend to be more focused as steakhouses, obviously with other items, steak, seafood, etc. And wild game is there, but it is not the, they'll talk about buffalo and they'll talk about these items and they'll have them, but it won't be their primary focus. How much time do you spend just going out into other restaurants and looking around?
A lot.
Okay, good. Are you going to Chicago?
No, sir, not this year.
Okay. Are you familiar with Gene and George Eddie's?
Yes, sir.
Okay, all right. They take a relatively simple menu. Now, see, it sounds Italian, but it's really a steakhouse.
Right.
And they do serve Italian food, but it's primarily a steakhouse. And the quality, there's two issues here, both food issues. One is the quality of the product. If you want a steak, there are a few other places, the Palm and so forth, where you can go and get that quality. The second is the way they cook it, and their char rare, char bleu, call it what you want, is without a doubt sets them apart. Just that item itself, the way people can get a steak that is, it's done on the way I understand it. They've wrapped it in olive oil and seasoning, very simple, usually spice and heavy pepper, and put it in the sweet spot, and that's where they started. You can do it in pans. But again, their quality and the way they cook it, it makes it so, it's so unique. How many places can you go and get an incredible steak and char rare? Now, I'm not, when you go look at these places, the other one is, how big is your place?
It is 100 and, well, the dining is about 120-something seats, and the bar is about 20 seats.
Okay, well, that's not bad. Is it broken up so that it looks full all the time?
No.
Okay. One of the things that, I'll tell you, people, when you walk into a restaurant, and I've seen data on this, by the way, but this just comes from experience. The more you can create the feeling that the restaurant's full, if it's really good, a lot of people are there. Mm-hmm. If people walk in and don't see a lot of people, there is truly a negative impression of the quality of the food.
Mm-hmm.
And some of this is design. I don't know. I think Steak and Ale, going back in the old days, Bill, was one of the best. They broke their restaurant up into small rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And so wherever they could partition them off so that when you came in, you'd go into an area and it was always filled. Houlihan's did a great job at Fridays of changing the angles. So and you could do this with plants and other areas. But, I'm assuming, and I just do your care and love of the business, that your food is good. So that isn't the problem. But one of the things you want to look at is how can I make it seem even busier when it's slow?
Mm-hmm.
And that positive reinforcement when a guest walks in and knows they've got to wait a little bit.
Well, one of the things that I think we talked about at one point, Edmund, was maybe even taking out a couple of tables. Because as I remember it, I mean, you've got that upper back section. I've got an advantage here, Don, having at least seen the place.
Right.
You've got sort of an upper back section that you can close off or break off, but otherwise you're pretty much in one big room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even that big. So but as I remember, you had a lot of tables in there.
Right.
You know, and again, this thing about a busy restaurant breeds more customers. You know, going back, however, you must have been doing a very good volume of business at one time.
Right.
Okay, 2 years ago, right?
Right.
And so, you know, for whatever reason, this people were drawn to your business.
Mm-hmm.
Now, being the entrepreneur and building a business in it, I built my restaurant it was one of the most out-of-the-way places that you could possibly imagine, and in an area that did not allow signing. And I did a lot of things. It's really hard to identify them. But I guess setting good food and a menu with common food, you know, jot this down. Common food done uncommonly as opposed to unusual exotic food. It's
right.
Trying to feed the mass market. And one of the things that we always did was whatever we did, there was an edge to it that we could share with the customers to tell them why it was better. I mean, anyway, from food to drink, if I were going to put out a sangria, it was going to have two drops of Tabasco sauce in it and tell you why that little aftertaste that you sense is what really makes the sangria good. Or the baking off of the prime rib in a brown paper bag. These were, whatever it was, we told the customer what made this unique. And it was always unique to whatever degree, but 24% of our product mixed with this, and that's where I wanted it, was prime rib.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, a 40-item menu. Now, that was stupid because I was just out of coaching and didn't know anything. I finally got the menu down to 26 items. And some of these, I'm telling you, just as thoughts. The other piece was that I, on a Saturday night and a Friday. See, Saturday night, I did 30% of my food. I made payroll on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And so at this point, I had a separate menu that looked identical to the one that I used during the week. But I took off what I called my puzzles, any item that didn't have that wasn't a big seller, and in other words, it wasn't highly popular, and took more effort in the kitchen so that I could speed up the kitchen. I'm not exaggerating now. By using that strategy and reducing the menu some and improving the quality of the service, the speed of the service in this case, I turned 500 seats. Now, we had a big extra seat. Now, we had a big restaurant. We started out with somewhere in the neighborhood of 350, and we ended up with 500 a la carte seats, another 500 in banquet seats, to give you some sort of a feel for what. But, you know, I got to go back to what really made the restaurant, I think, and that was you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think the difference is that you walk that floor, and you talk to the people, and you remember their names, as we talked about before. That was what I did. I, of all the things that I could separate, I did what my teacher taught me. And I had the greatest teacher in the world in my book, and that was Win Schuler, Bill Knowles.
Yeah.
He's passed away now, but the man, the first thing he ever told me about the restaurant, the first thing, I'll never forget, I was leaving coaching and going into the business, and call this guy up only because I didn't know who the hell Win Schuler was, but I called him up and told him who I was and that I loved his restaurant. We would go out to eat probably twice a year on our birthday and anniversary, and we would drive to Marshall, Michigan, and I was so impressed with what he was doing. And I said, "Could I talk to you?" The guy said, "Come on down." and just like that, "Come on down. I'll sure be happy to." So I went in the early morning and drove to Marshall, and he spent the entire day. I'll never forget, he had a meeting with Romney that night, but the man spent the entire day with
the governor of Michigan, by the way.
He would let me follow him around and just watch what he did. But the first thing in any kind of that he told me that a lesson was, Don, remember their names. If you remember their names, I guarantee you that you will run a successful restaurant. Because if you work at remembering the names, you're going to work at everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And, boy, that personal thing, you have lost it with this fellow. And I'm guessing that that's the single most important thing. I have two other things that I really believe in. I mean, and I'm talking for guys like you, entrepreneurs, although I think it works for chains as well. But I wouldn't operate without the unexpected extra. And that is that in my restaurant, we had a plan where we would give the guests food that night. Every table got something they didn't expect to get. And it was a gift of hospitality, if you please. And this is something that we did. We took 4 cents out of our sales, really 3.8% out of our sales, and gave it back to the guests once they walked in the door. And our special wine, or, you've got buffalo, and they ordered fish, and you want them to have a little taste of what buffalo is. And, you know, you folks, you got to try this. I'm just dropping off. I want you to taste this. And by the way, slow days are for making customers.
Mm-hmm.
You slower the day, the more opportunities you have to build a customer for life. And this unexpected extra was such a powerful thing with us. And then the other one is I talk about in every opportunity that I had. I wish you could see some of the I've taken pictures. I mean, God, I have hundreds of pictures of my customers and things we did at Chateau, but it's feed the ego as well as the appetite. Now, part of the remember the name thing is these are just cliches today, but I coined them. I'm going back to 1965, 66, 67. They still work. And my menu had items. For example, I had one item on my menu that said, with a little help from our guests. And every month, I had a special recipe that a guest gave us, and I put that in their name.
Mm-hmm.
My walls were lined with drawings. Now, art's a hobby of mine. I don't expect that this is going to be something that you do. But I took what I could do, and what I could do is I could draw faces. And so what I did was drew faces of my customers, put them on the walls. I had 320 pictures. I eventually made one of my Key Club menu, luncheon menu, was all faces on the cover, naming food after and naming items after guests. Feed the ego as well as the appetite. That is what they're not going to do with the chain.
Right.
You know, this is the kind of stuff that, from everything you told me, you're not going to get out of the gentleman that you brought in, who is the administrative type.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's me just talking. You know, where are you coming from? What's on your mind?
No, I'm just taking all this in. I'm just taking all this
okay.
in.
Well,
I like the idea. I mean, if you play with that idea of having a weekend menu that's shorter, quicker to get out, less specialized, maybe. It gives you a reason to invite people back on Monday and Tuesday.
Sure.
Because
sure.
You say,
You know, they never noticed it, Bill.
They didn't.
I my first fear, like most of the things that I did in my restaurant as a novice, I had all the fears that the typical restaurateur has, meaning that, they're going to notice that I took fondue bourguignon. For example, I had fondue bourguignon, okay? That's just an item. It's filet mignon cut up into, morsels, okay, about the size of a quarter that they could cook themselves in a pot of boiling oil. And we had 6 sauces that we served with it. It was not a highly popular item, but people wanted it and they came in for it. But the trouble was, when they came in, they sat.
And it's a very conversational
kind of
thing. It was a
3-hour deal.
Right.
And so, well, it was less than 6% of my menu mix, which is I kind of used as what I called less than highly popular. What I did was took it off, and God, they're going to notice it. And every once in a while, somebody would notice it, but so infrequently. And when they did, I got it for them. But that even made them feel more special.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But this menu idea, I don't know who has ever done it, Bill, beside myself. Obviously, it put us up at Mid Off for lunch. This is where I got, why aren't we doing this on a special night? We do it on holidays. Because our menu was, even with 26 to 28 items, had a pretty tough menu to put out, even though some of the items were the same. When we finally got down to it, Well, we had 18 items to 16 items, probably 12 different products. And we could spend much more time making those things really good. And, you know, that separate menu really did work. You know what I never did? And I didn't have the guts to do it. I don't know how, and I still don't know whether or not it would have worked or killed me because I didn't have the courage. But that was to have separate prices on weekends.
Right, higher prices?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
If you're doing the big business, and, you know, that's when you're jammed.
Right.
Now, let me just make another suggestion. And here, write this down if you don't do it. If you have an item in your menu, okay,
mm-hmm.
that goes $6.85.
Right.
$7.75.
Mm-hmm.
You're crazy. You're nuts.
Mm-hmm.
You drive everything to 95. They don't know the difference in
it. Right. Drive it to 99 and they don't know the difference.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that. 99 bothers me. but people do it today. 99
yeah.
sounds like a fast food joint to me.
Right.
And I've argued against it, and it's one of those things that you say, well, people, it's not going to work. And yet people do it, and they do it very well. But if you, every nickel, if you're charging $7.85 for an item, or yours a little higher, let's say $15.85. I
right.
guarantee you that customer is not going to make notice the difference.
Right, at the 95.
You bet. And therefore,
right.
every nickel that you go back and change that menu tomorrow is going to drop right to the bottom line.
There's something I heard the other day, and I don't know, I haven't seen it in menus, and it'll be an interesting experiment, but in direct mail type things, if you have a price that ends in a 7, you get a better response than if it ends in some other number.
Hmm. Interesting.
So
I've never heard
1287 will sell better than, it'll sell better than 1275, it'll sell better than 1295.
I think.
And I don't know why that is, but I heard that. So.
Yeah, my gut would tell me drive it right up to the limit because they don't know the difference. There was a restaurant out of Denver years ago that I was so impressed with. And again, I was impressed with it. Maybe, you know, you got to be careful. You become too sophisticated. You lose customer eyes. But they charge you $7, $8, $9 for their food.
Right.
And man, you know, I know this is not, according to the marketers, the smart way to go. But on the other hand, it was so refreshing for me to see somebody that says, you know, I know you're smart enough to tell the difference between $7.95 and $8.
Right, right.
And
that's what they tell you, that at a certain level restaurant that you shouldn't be at $17.95, you should just be at $18.
I believe that. I think your customers are sophisticated enough. If they can pay that kind of money.
Right.
So look at that and pricing. But all of these are just little bits. And by the way, you don't make your money in big ways. You make
anyway, charge them $18 and give them a nickel back. Put a nickel in their hands and just say, I just want you to know.
Or a telephone card for the next time they want to call.
Right, right, right.
Absolutely.
What about, and this is shifting back to what Bill said, on that lodge feel, Bill, could you elaborate down that a little bit more?
Well, I think the... People don't go out to eat because they're hungry. I mean, they wouldn't go out to eat if they weren't, I suppose. But there's a lot of ways to take care of hungry that don't have anything to do with going out. So I think what you've got to sell is that it feels better here. Not only physically, but the fact that we care more and we take care of you better and all those things that Don was talking about. And it just seems to me that if you push the feel of it, that particularly lodge-like feel, I would expect steak, I would expect fish. What else would I get in the lodge? You know, obviously you're hunting, so you'd have the game stuff. It seems to me that lodge sort of intuitively includes all those other items.
Well, how good is the decor?
Decor could be, you could bump the decor.
You could what the decor, Bill?
You could bump up the decor.
Mm-hmm.
I'd look at and maybe spend a little bit of money inside, because I don't recall, we don't have logs inside, right?
You have what inside?
You don't have logs. I mean, you don't have a log wall look inside.
No. I basically what we did. It's a downplay. It's not a real. What's the word? It's not a real artsy looking lodge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rustic? Is it rustic?
Rustic.
Yeah.
No, not really.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it's not rustic, like with the law is kind of rustic, no.
You know, just remember engineered darkness.
Mm-hmm.
So the less decor, the darker the room.
Mm-hmm.
Fire, I love the fire and water principle. Every one of my restaurants, every one, had a fireplace. People love a fireplace. It's homey, it's warm. Now, we had to fake it sometimes, but, you know, anything I did had such a realistic look to it. In one of the areas, see, what comes with your food? If I ordered an entree, what would I get?
It comes with your choice of potato and the vegetable of the day.
What's your potato?
It's a garlic. It's a skin-on garlic mash. Your regular baked potato or a golden roast.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Are you giving your customers? One of the things that's so annoying to me as a business person is when they ask me all kind of questions. I did a study for a restaurant chain in Michigan. In fact, Finley's. I don't know if you know it or not.
Yeah, I know of them.
God, I tell you, I counted 24 questions.
I was going to say 20 questions.
I got my entree.
20 right. Questions to get a meal.
Yeah, I mean, from smoking to this to the area to the table that you like to the four different salad dressings. Four potatoes, you needed a doggone computer just to handle that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I want to make it as comfortable for my customer as I possibly can. But when you talk about real hospitality, the kind of thing that I think that a guy like you who's going to be there is, you know, that giving that customer something. Now, you know, Bill, you said something a little while ago. I did a study for Kentucky Fried Chicken and why people went out to eat. And there were about five, you could catalog them in about five basic different areas. But they really ran from, I can't think of the exact word we use, but utilitarian, okay? At the very low level. I'm hungry, I'm going to go to KFC or whatever. The next step was like replacement meal. I mean, it's got to be a setup that makes it so comfortable that I can still feel like I'm at home in the price category and get the food. And this was not to bring it home, but to eat there. So the pricing and the products are all kind of the stuff you're going to get at home, okay? Then the next level, and you move all the way up to the top level, is almost like a Maslow scale, where at the top level we're going out to probably celebrate and entertain, and the Celebration House is just an incredible opportunity. I think that Buca's probably has done the best job of anybody in a celebration. Are you familiar with Buca's at all?
No, I am not.
Okay. It's growing up. It started out in Minneapolis, and there's, I don't know.
You mean Buca di Beppo?
Maybe not quite that many, but it's family style. Again, if you have a chance,
mm-hmm.
go to Buca's because I'm not suggesting Buca's is for you. I'm just
now, how do you spell that?
Buca.
You're talking about the Italian place?
Pardon?
Yeah, are we talking about the Italian place?
Yes.
Yeah, Buca di Beppo.
Buca di Beppo, yes.
Buca di Beppo, right.
Yeah, actually, I have been in one.
Okay, they target the celebration market.
Okay.
And while they've copied a concept out of New York that Brinker is doing with Maggiones, and very successfully, by the way,
mm-hmm.
They have added a dimension like no one has done so far, and that's the fun part of it.
Okay.
And, you know, fun is a very ambiguous term.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to go to places that are having where they're having fun, and I don't mean birthday party stuff where everybody sits around and sings. That gets to be so boring today that it's just ridiculous. But doing fun things, you know where fun comes from? Service people. If you have fun in the restaurant and your service people know that they can have fun. You know, and the one thing I sent you, I think I told the story about Harold,
right?
The first waiter that I ever encountered at a Victoria station. I'll never forget this guy. He made that night. Now, that's finding characters. They're not necessarily easy to manage, by the way.
Yeah.
But, boy, do they make customers. But, you know, Bill talked about people not going out just to eat. There's a couple of things there that I could add to that. Number one, I believe my teacher taught me to put food on the table. The instant they came up, within 1 minute, my joint, you had food. Now, it was a relish tray because that's what I just copied what Schuller did, and I used a seven-compartment relish tray. It was plugged in. And back in those days, I gave 50, you got, in addition to the cost of the entree, 54 cents of food in between, and this was not the unexpected extra, but this was the my add-on items, complimentary items. And sometimes it can just be great bread. I mean, by the way, I personally judge a restaurant by the quality of its bread.
Mm-hmm.
You show, bread is one of the most unstable products any restaurant serves. It has a short shelf life. It takes incredible effort to make high-quality, crusty French bread, Italian bread. And by the way, it fills people up. And we just focused on bread. It was a critical thing. So we dropped that great bread on the table. Gene and George Eddy's did a great job of this too. But these are, you know, and again, I got to be careful. I'm not trying to make you turn your place into a Chateau Louise,
mm-hmm.
but I am saying that we were a celebration restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Go into the idea that what does Buca do about the celebration thing?
Well, first of all, communal type food. People sharing food is fun.
Mm-hmm.
There, by the way, there are very few items, food items that are fun. Pizza's fun. Ice cream's fun. Buca's food, by the way, is so good. The sharing of it brings you together as a party of people at a table, and it's a fun experience. Sharing food and sharing taste. I do think, however, the thing that is the most fun, of course, their atmosphere. You know, Frank Sinatra, all the Italian stuff, okay, and having fun with it, the pictures, having fun with it. There's a little restaurant, I shouldn't say a little restaurant, two of my students now opened up a restaurant like I had. One of my restaurants was Steak Biddy Allen's in Chicago, okay? And it was called LeBeauf, and they opened one up in Houston, Texas. It's called The Taste of Texas, and you go to the butcher shop and have the steaks cut for you to the size you want, and you pay according to the ounce. And they have other items, of course, on the menu, but it's fun. It's a fun experience. This was one room where that was all there was. The menu was that or prime rib. You could have prime rib or a steak for the aunts and lobster and thing. But three items. They represented about, I think that represented about 80% of my menu mix. Anyway, 75% of your mix is going to be red meat.
Mm-hmm.
And even though people are talking red meat down today, it's still the most popular food when people celebrate. Steak, lobster, prime rib. And in any case, Buca's fun is atmosphere tied to food, tied to the most fun managers that influence fun service people. And the service people know it's okay. You know what you have to have in a service person, which is a reader. The most important thing on a good service person is someone with what I call great empathy. They can read the guest. They know the kind of mood the guest was there. So they're not a person that just comes on with one format. Their ability to read the guest and know that this is one you don't start having a lot of fun with, and you're much more, you're quiet in your approach, and this one you can have fun with. That's, by the way, I don't think something you teach. I think that's something people have.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have those kind of people working for you, you encourage it. If, you know, I don't see this at all in chains. As a general rule, it's not encouraged. Melman does it. There's a few others that would do it. Buca's do it, but most people they think that the food is the act for which people come to the restaurant,
mm-hmm.
and it's not. It's a part of the act. It's a part of an important part, but that service and that atmosphere is really it. And I think putting yourself on the floor, an entrepreneur has to be on the floor to compete. That gives you an edge that no one else is going to have. Then what you do on that floor Oh, man, what you do in that Florida. And everybody has to understand, we have one objective tonight. Once they put their hind end in our chairs, in my case, we had an hour and 45 minutes to make them ours. An hour and 45 minutes, when they get up, they will want to use this place for their bar mitzvahs, their communions, their... And I'm not kidding. That was my mantra, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You heard this from me over and over again, and then I lived it on the floor. And by the way, if you think I enjoyed it, I think I told you the last time, man, it took so much out of me.
Right.
But, hey, that's how I made my living.
Yeah. See, and that was 2 years ago, that was where I was. I was so burned out of doing that kind of thing that's why I hired someone to systemize the place, blah, 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 yeah. So that, you know, it could have a life without me.
You did. You did what I did.
Mm-hmm.
You built yourself a trap.
Right. The personality trap.
It is.
It's a personality trap.
Right.
Because when you're not there, what would happen to you on the street, Edmund, mm-hmm. is people stop and say, you know, I was in the restaurant the other night.
Right.
Where were you?
Yeah, exactly.
And the food's not quite as good.
Right. And my challenge now is to get the restaurant, you know, in my mind, I need to get the place back to where it was, and then I need to kind of look back at it again and figure out how to do it right the second time around.
Now, I think you got to get it back. I think you have to get, if I can sort of throw a twist on it,
mm-hmm.
I think you want to get the feel back, but I don't think you take the restaurant back to where it was. I think what you got to do is take the restaurant to a new spot.
To a new spot where it doesn't require me.
Well, not necessarily. What I'm saying is you don't go back. It's like if Don was going to do a restaurant today, he wouldn't do Chateau Louise
right.
again.
Oh, yes,
you would do something different. Now, you've been there, I mean, Saskatoon's been there how long now?
6 years.
6 years, it's time. It's time to do something to shake it up a little bit, to reinvent it a little bit, to, you know, do a little bit of interior stuff, maybe pull out some tables so you can look busier, and on the weekends maybe that means people wait a little bit longer, or you...
Yeah, how do you pull those out and put them back in on the weekends?
You don't put them back in on the weekends.
You don't.
Because now you've got to wait. Now people say, damn, there must be something going on there.
The wait is the most important sign you have.
Right.
I'm not just making a speech, man.
Mm-hmm.
When people see people waiting, that is the best sign a restaurant can have.
Mm-hmm. See, I need those tables on the weekends. We are on an hour wait. Where I'm dying is the weekdays.
Well, we all kind of die in the weekdays. the idea then, certainly one of the things that would work for him, Bill,
mm-hmm.
I think, was the second menu.
Yeah.
Because if you're slugging hard as you can on Fridays and Saturdays, take a look at the, you know, that I wrote a book called Menu Engineering.
Right.
Since then, it's been, you know, ripped off by a lot of people. But there are four basic items, there are really two ways to look at a menu item. That's all, popularity and profitability. Popularity, and now don't even worry about labor.
Right.
People get into labor, they don't, I can tell as soon as these are academics. You get into labor at one area, and that's when the thing is unpopular, but it's really high profitability, and it's a part of, an extension of, for example, we had prime rib. We sold prime rib in three different cuts. The English cut, the regular, and Henry VIII. The Henry VIII, you got seconds on the innkeeper.
Seconds on the what?
We gave you seconds.
Oh, right, you gave you seconds?
Yeah. Now, that came out, it was a bone and another slice, so it was so big. It was such a roast. And by the way, when we sold that item, we didn't double the price on it. It was two size. It was about twice as big as the normal cut. But we operated on the gross profit theory. Okay, now, do you know what that means?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got to make, in those days, now I don't know what your number is, but my number is I had to make $3 after you left the table. In order to achieve my financial objectives, I had to make $3 in every customer. That means after the cost of goods,
mm-hmm.
and drink.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm going back to ancient history now, but the numbers are as important as I knew what I had. So as long as I was making that, I could afford to give you more food than the competition could dream of. I mean, the restaurateurs used to come over to my place and say, boy, you don't know much about the business. You know, you got to be losing money on this.
Right.
And I love for them to say that. You know, I loved it. The greatest advantage I have is that I didn't know anything about the business. And I did learn very, very quickly. But the gross profit theory of pricing beats the hell out of factor pricing. So I never tried a 2.5 times markup. I had to add, $3 in most cases because beverage alcohol was. I sold. See, we had a goal there. Everything had a goal, but we had to sell $1 in beverage to every $3 in food. And
okay.
I monitored that damn thing. Now I don't care what it is, but everyone has to know that this beverage alcohol. Now beverage, the whole sales of beverage alcohol has changed today. But even under those circumstances, where wine has become, wine was a substitute for water. Today it's another way of selling a cocktail because people are going to spend plenty of money for wine. But regardless, even water, you still have to take a look at that easy money. So we brought them in as Shuler. We gave you so damn much food, man, but we didn't sell appetizers. Not that we didn't have them, but we didn't sell them because we came to the table and sat down a lot of food in front of you. And two martinis later, we had it back plus.
Mm-hmm.
But our strategy, which I believe, and I don't care what restaurant it is, you have to, if you're trying to appeal to the masses, you got to give them more food than they think they paid for.
Right. Talk to me about the relish tray.
Well, the relish tray, I don't know that I would do that today, but, okay, let me give you an idea. It was a 7-item relish tray. From the most expensive, the one item that was very expensive that Shuler used, that I used, was pickled herring. Everything else was, little bits of cheese and, relish and, items, small items, very tasty items. And so the first thing we hit your table with was the bread and the butter. And this was followed up within another minute. I don't know if I sent that to you in my service thing, but the service system. So we were going to guarantee the next that we're going to hit you with that relish tray, in between which we were taking your order for drinks. We were not putting a menu in your hand. Don't put a menu in their hand until they're ready for the food. What I see people do is put menus in people's hands when they want to sell them drinks.
Mm-hmm.
So our rule, and believe me, this worked. We didn't put a menu in their hands until we asked them for the drink. If they wanted, may I take your cocktail order? Not would you like a drink? May I take your cocktail order now? Or would you like to wait? And if you have a menu for drinks, it's okay. Some people really believe in it. Maybe if you got a lot of fancy drinks, that's good. But in any case, the relish tray came out, and you drank with it. Also, it tempered your hunger, and if we were jammed, it helped us relieve the weight in case food wasn't coming out as fast as that we'd like to have it come out of the kitchen. And by the way, these things, there's so many things. But one of the other things I learned from a guy, Paul Shank, out in the Tiffin Inn in I think Phoenix. I sent my wife out. It was nothing. I've had so many guys in this industry. I call them up and I say, how do you do this? And they say, well, come on down. In this case, I sent my wife down to find out how he did the expediter system. I'm not talking about the expediter system the way Houlihan's used it, the wheelman. I am talking about no service person went into the kitchen. We had runners. And you only have to use runners on like Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And a Friday night when you're jammed. This way they run the food and your salespeople, what we call, your marketing people, which are waitresses and waiters, they stayed on the floor and they sold beverage alcohol and took care of your needs. People wanted a little more of this, a little more of that. We made enormous amounts of money on this. My biggest problem back then was financing because I had terrible, terrible financing. The bank was making more money on what I was selling than I was. But I could make money before that, before this occupancy cost like nobody's business.
Mm-hmm.
And so the relish tray, today, you might do a cheese tray. Think about what would fit, your kind of restaurant. But one of the areas that in the LeBouf, which is our steakhouse, we wheeled up a cheese tray that had all kind of wheels of different kinds of cheese and asked you what you like. We sliced a little of this, a little Munster, a little blue cheese, a little this, a little that, and put it on the table for people. Again, food that people would drink with.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Galleon, which was my fresh seafood restaurant, who do we serve there? We served, some kind of fish balls and things like that. But the only place we used a seven-compartment relish tray was the Schuller-style restaurant. But you talk about fun, our beams. You know, we had beams across the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Every beam had writing on it. And it was, we wrote things out in French. And I'm about as French as Phil is. But people would sit there and try to figure out what, and some of the statements were absolutely stupid, like don't play handball against this wall,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But just fun. Some were nice, you know, a day without wine is like a day without sunshine or something like that, you know, stuff like that. But fun stuff where people could try to translate. Anytime I saw a good idea that I thought was from a customer's eyes, fun to go to. My decor was like very few restaurants you've ever seen, and I'm telling you the truth. It's not just a brag; it's a fact. But my restaurant was my hobby, and I must tell you, even at my hobby, I got to the point where I was burned out too.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest thing you can do is find somebody that, and I did find them. I found somebody. They were never going to be me because there's one thing the owner has that nobody else has. But I found a guy named Lenny Frost who was absolutely incredible. Another lady by the name of Mara Palmer. And a guy named Dick Woods. And these people ran my restaurants and they were characters. I mean characters. They'd argue with me. My statement was, you never won the Kentucky Derby with a jackass. Thoroughbreds are so hard to handle.
Mm-hmm.
And thoroughbreds are hard people to deal with, but they're worth it. They make you money.
Yeah.
But that's the relish tray. If the relish, you know, funny, I knew I was going to do this with Bill today. And I think there's so many formats. And the kind of thing is you can't do everything. And you just got to pick out something that, with your higher ticket, here's one I want you to write down.
Okay.
Give your customer a chance to spend more.
Mm-hmm.
Give your customer a chance to spend more. So you can, whatever you've got on your item, menu pricing is one of the worst things you can have is a price on a menu because it tells the customer this is the most you can spend.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say for the ounce, for example, you could have as much as you want, as big as you want, and and we did at times. Not a lot of people, but... The shape of the ounces, it was not as confining as having a menu and saying the top thing on this menu was $16.95 or $18.95. So you've got to have something. Bambi's, I'm having fun now, but, you know, you got Bambi's mother, and that's only $700 a plate. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wouldn't use Bambi, but I would have some kind of thing. Most popular thing that's going on television right now. But I'd have some fun with that game stuff.
Okay.
I don't know what it is, you got to watch out for the animal lovers today. They're nuts. But I don't know. I think the biggest thing you're going to do to bring it back is going to be on the floor,
mm-hmm.
the unexpected extra,
mm-hmm.
feed the ego as well as the appetite, give the customer a chance to spend more, so you're going to put an item on the menu. Who did that great job with that... Somebody did the Fiesta. Do you remember, Bill?
No, I'm trying to.
The regular menu was priced pretty, middle of the road. And Bobby McGee's. And they came out with one item called the Fiesta. And every once in a while, somebody ordered it. And when they did, the whistles blew. And absolutely just wonderful. Now, Bobby McGee's was a fun, built on the concept of fun.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, this is changing subjects a little bit. I know that you've written treatises on service and everything, Coach. What about this Houston's? Have you been? You've been in a Houston's restaurant.
I love Houston's.
Yeah, this team approach to service. Yeah. How do you build that? I mean, you
don't like it.
You don't like it?
Oh God! The last experience I had, in fact, one of the guys, the guy in charge of recruiting, is one of my students.
For Houston's?
Yeah. And he is, and we correspond all the time, and I told him how terribly disappointed I was. Now, he said they were in training, okay?
They weren't. But
what I found is that there was no relationship at all between the service person and the table. There was no chance to build a... It was, this person was delivering this to my table. Now, I know Mike Hurst likes, you know, whatever's up, bring it out now.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay, but
I don't have a problem with that. But you lose the personal connection.
Oh, don't you?
You become efficiently processed.
Yeah.
But hey,
if you have a team approach and one team has a series of, let's say, five tables or something like that, what we did, and it was like pulling teeth. It was one of the best moves we ever made service wise, and. And when I say pulling teeth, we had, I remember when I first started, I was told that you could handle about 16 people. And I think the average is like four tables per, you know, four tops. Or you got an eight and then you got three, four tops. I cut that back. And I tell you what, I tried it and started and quit and started and quit because my people didn't want it. The service people, they take, you know, the average service person, you give them a chance, they'll take eight tables, 10 tables.
Right.
They want to make us all, and I promised them they could make more money, and if they didn't, we'd go back to the old system. The only way I got them to cut back to three tables to improve the quality of service and give more personalized service was to do exactly that, and that's what we did. We cut it, and they made, and, you know, I had a whole research program at Chateau Louise, and I never realized it because I never thought much about it except I was always trying to improve things. But if you keep a team approach, or keep the team so that they realize that they had a limited number of tables and that they really had to make sure they focused on it, you know, usually one's in the kitchen, one of the other's in the dining room, that kind of stuff, it can work.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that I personally, on busy nights, there's nothing beats the expediter system.
Right, right.
Nothing, man. Keep that service person on the floor. So what you need are a few people that just muscle they muscle the trays. If that's how you're doing it, tray service. They muscle it out of the kitchen and into the dining room. And once they set it down, the servers come in and deliver the food.
Okay.
But more important, I think, is identifying the quality of people that you want to work for you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And then give them a very clear picture of what this restaurant's about.
Right.
We're in the business of making and keeping customers.
Mm-hmm.
And once they're done, and then now, see, you knew if you came to work for me, you knew you had a certain amount of money that you could spend on that guest every night.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had that 4 cents. And I forget what it was, you know. It averaged something in the neighborhood of 50, 60 bucks one time a night that we could give away in our cost, okay? And you write that off as marketing.
Mm-hmm.
But that was at 3.8% of the sales. This was the way we advertised. We advertised, it was my way of saying it, we're going to advertise on you when you walk in the joint.
Mm-hmm. Should I perhaps look at the money that we're spending on radio or whatever to get people for new trial and maybe cut that money back and just focus that inside the four walls?
You picked up that. That's great. You bet.
Yeah.
I would certainly look at it because, you know, obviously you're advertising and your sales are dropping.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, you know, it's worth a try. I'm always afraid to recommend something. You know, Bill, you know that.
Yes.
You're afraid to tell somebody to do something. I'm throwing you ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was an entrepreneur today, and again, depending on the areas and so forth, but I would buy my customers. This is how I coined the phrase. I will buy my customer's word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And that word of mouth is the best advertising in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you come in, and I get, you know, in those days, I'd give you something. Sometimes there'd be ashtrays with our name on it. I got that from Shure. This is he always gave you something. It was a bottle of wine. Used to cost me a buck and a quarter, FOB, New York. And, you know, this is overruns that we buy in France. Real inexpensive stuff. But it was, to the average American, it was great. Because it had Chateau Louise on it, and it had our name on it. And you give that, you didn't do that to everybody. You give that bottle of wine to someone to take home. Oh, my God. They're advertising for you the whole, you know. And by the way, you get every party. On your menu, do you write, Do you have any party rooms, Lily? You do, don't you?
No, I mean, but we have, you know, like one part that we station off for parties. It's not a separate party room.
Okay.
On the weekdays, we use it for that.
Okay, you know, on my menu, because I did have, on the menu I was promoting, right where you'd be looking at the food, you can have an affair here.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would say we have so many rooms and had a little fun thing with the statement and, you know.
I think it's time to do something just to make it a little bit more fun.
Mm-hmm.
You may have just gotten a little bit serious.
Yeah.
And a little, wait, when you burned out.
Do what?
That's funny. Oh, God.
Yeah, maybe I've grown up.
Yeah, well, it could be. And now, you know, well, we're kind of getting sort of running out of time here, but you know that Don's going to be in Charlotte. You may not know that Don's going to be in Charlotte a couple of weeks, isn't it, Don?
Yeah, on the 15th or something like that for a chart.
Oh, really?
Yes, I'm going to do the chart program, and in fact, I'll be talking about what we've done to teach people service and hospitality. And I make a distinction, as you probably saw.
Right.
I make a serious distinction between hospitality and service. I treat service as a system, and hospitality is the caring side of the system. And the hospitality comes from the people, and the service comes from the system.
Mm-hmm.
And both are important, but you better have both.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just... See, the guy that you're dealing with is probably... is really good at putting systems together.
Right.
And it's very good.
Mm-hmm.
But... And sooner or later, apes can operate on systems.
Right, right.
I got to have somebody that knows when they can smile at you and laugh at you. And, you know, this kind of stuff. The Harold stuff. Don't lose me. If you lose me, you lose a good thing.
All right, all right.
Yeah.
Now, you're in Charlotte when? April or March?
March. Let me see. And my wife handled all.
And this is for a chart program?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where is it here? Jackie was here, I could tell you. I don't watch.
And I don't remember offhand because I know I had a conflict, so I wasn't going to be there.
I forgot about that. I've got, okay, I'm going to speak. I've got it here on the 20th.
Of March.
It's in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, they changed the date on me twice, but that's it now. I think I'm on early in the morning. I hope I'm on early in the morning.
Mm-hmm. And this is a program that Chart has that is an ongoing continuing education kind of thing?
Yes. Chart, to me, is one of the most effective and best organizations in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know why? They give, their whole focus is on giving you things you can do, not just theory.
Right.
But here are some things that you can do to help train your people.
Mm-hmm.
And what you have are the people doing it. So the people that are there... are people that are actually in the training function.
Okay.
What is it? The Council of Hotel Restaurant Trainers. Isn't that
right? Is that under chart.com or something, Bill?
Yeah, is it, Bill?
Yeah, well, you'd have to, you've got to be a multi-unit trainer to be a member.
Right.
Can you get in? You know what? If you came to me and you wanted to go, you just find me, and you don't have to worry, I'll bring you in.
Okay.
If you wanted to go to that thing, and don't you, you know, I think...
You could... That they would let you bring a guest in, I'm sure.
Okay. I'm going to have bring my wife in anyway.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you could qualify. You're multi-unit.
Right, right.
You know, you could qualify based on that. So I'm the guy that does the training for this joint.
Okay, okay.
No trouble if you just find me and I bring you in.
And okay. That's the easy way to do it. It's just have Don bring you in and just say... you know, get somebody want him to take a.
Yeah,
he want to sit on my thing. He may be a
projector.
He may be a member, potential member.
Right. Okay. All right. I'll see how my mom is doing. If I can break away to do that, that would be great.
Okay.
Well, Coach, again, my, you know, I mean, it's been a great hour.
I thank you, pal. It was a pleasure.
Back to your weekly private consultation.
I'll tell you what, you know, this is the best thing going. Yeah, I told my wife that, you know, I can't believe I used to fly to those things.
I'm doing the NRA with Mike Hurst again.
Right. I buy those tapes. I buy selected tapes from the show every year. That'll have to be part of my library.
Yeah, I'll be in Italy, or otherwise I would be there for sure.
Where are you going in Italy?
Back to Umbria.
Oh,
going to be in central Italy for a week.
Is this custodial or pleasure?
This is our annual corporate meeting.
Oh, okay. Yes, right.
Got to have the corporate meeting somewhere.
Of course. Well,
nobody said where.
The South Pacific, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I'd invite you along, Don, but it sounds like they have you otherwise occupied.
I'd go. Jackie's there right now.
Oh, really?
My wife is with my number one grandson. We just got back from a cruise a week before. That was last week.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a good 6 days. She loves to travel. You know, my life now is keeping giving back a little bit to her because she was one of these wives that was always there when I needed her,
mm-hmm.
and was neglected so much of the time. What a champ. I that was one of the best things I ever did was
take
that
great.
Gal, and vice versa, I guess. But she made my life possible. Now, can you imagine our 29-year-old grandson wants to go to Rome with his grandma?
Oh.
Isn't that nice?
Awesome. Wow. That's great.
Yeah, you know, and just the two of them. They're just cavorting around.
Wow, that's great.
Oh, yeah, we got a great family. The whole family gets together every week and cooks some kind of crazy food and just has a wonderful time.
That's super.
Yeah, you when you had to work every... My kids all had to work for me. What do you mean? I just didn't joke about it. What do you mean I got a date? Get your butt down here now.
Always a pleasure, Don.
Oh, Bill.
Listen, I appreciate your time, and we will... let's not have this be the end of it.
Oh, no. I enjoy it. It really is no sweat doing this kind of thing. And, I hear, somebody... it's fun to do because you care and you're trying, you're listening. I wish there were answers, real answers. But you have to go there, you have to look at it.
Yeah, right.
And frankly, I don't want to, okay?
You gotta be careful now. If I come to Charlotte, I might just hijack you in the car down here.
Oh man, I my days of going out to restaurants, my favorite place to eat. Is at home.
Yeah.
Oh. Anyway, pal.
Listen, enjoy.
You're very flattering that you're interested, and I hope you remember now. Give them the opportunity to spend more.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, gang.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay, guys.
Bye-bye.
Talk.
Hey, Bill, I guess this is going to be it for today.